Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics, and that clip you just heard was from A Quiet Place, the horror film that has everybody buzzing right now. It's directed by John Krasinski, his third film as a director, his first in which he's co-starring with Emily Blunt, actually on screen, so that's a first. So we're going to be talking about that in just a few minutes with my buddy Wilson Morales of BlackFilm.com. He'll be calling in just a minute, I hope. And I always say that every time I invite Wilson on, because I never am quite sure. We'll see what happens. We're also going to be talking about Blockers, the sex comedy starring John Cena, Leslie Mann, and Ike Barinholtz. These are two films that have people really talking right now for different reasons. A Quiet Place has been buzzed about ever since it premiered at South by Southwest. A few weeks ago, and Blockers, which also played at South By, I think it surprised a lot of people. Sex comedies tend to be mostly focused on the male perspective. This one is centered on three high school girls who make a pact to lose their virginity on prom night. We've seen that premise before, usually with guys, and this one is about females and their parents who set out to stop them from having sex. What was, you know, kind of, I think, problematic about it, at least in terms right from the start with people, was that it was written by five men. So we'll talk about that and if that has any impact on how the women are portrayed in this movie or not. But what I will say is John Cena, yeah, he's found his spot. He doesn't need to wrestle anymore. He can stop now. He can just go ahead and act. He's barely wrestling anyway, so he can just go ahead and just do movies from now on. oh, look, Wilson's there. Okay, so we're gonna bring him on in just a second. But before I do that, I want to thank everybody who has been tuning in to Cinema Royale every week. I appreciate it, and also those of you who listen to us on Critical, the Movie Critics Network, here on Blog Talk Radio, and on Facebook. You guys keep us going, man. I love it. This is kind of a busy weekend for me, so this might be an abbreviated show somewhat. This is WrestleMania weekend. You guys know how I feel about wrestling. You know how I feel about the WWE. You know how I feel about wrestling in general. And there's about 14 hours of wrestling going on this weekend. I think I've gone through about half of it now and seven more to go. So, I'm kind of squeezing in the show today. So we're going to try to keep this thing going right now. Let's bring in Wilson, my buddy Wilson of BlackFilm.com. What up, Wilson?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good, man. How you been?
Good. Good Sunday morning / afternoon. You know, you never know with the weather in New York City. 1 minute's 60 degrees, next minute it's like 35.
It's like that here in D.C. too, actually. And we were supposed to get snow yesterday. I think we got like a touch of sleet for like a few minutes. But it was like 70 degrees on Friday. And then it was like 40 yesterday or something like that for a while. And we don't know what the hell's going on from day to day anymore.
Yeah, you never know. You know, this is April. You never know if it's going to get showers or not.
Yeah, I know, right? So So I wanted you to come on here and talk about A Quiet Place, directed by John Krasinski. You had a chance to see it, right?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. You know,
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I think most people know what the premise of the movie is at this point. There's been so much buzz about it, and it looks like it's going to have a huge opening weekend. I'm seeing estimates of over $40 million already. I haven't done our box office breakdown yet, but that's what they're projecting. But it's directed by John Krasinski. It's his third film as a director. He did The Hollers a couple of years ago, family comedy, and he did God, what was the other movie he did? Was it In the Company of Men or something like that? I can't remember. I don't know. I can't remember what it was. But this is by far his most successful film, in my opinion. And what the central premise of it is that it's almost done entirely in silence. You know, it centers on a family of four living out in an isolated farmhouse, and the world which has been devastated by some sort of catastrophe, is stalked by creatures that hunt by sound. So this family goes through their day-to-day trying not to make a single noise. And for me, it made for a very nerve-wracking experience seeing through it. And I think it was the same for the entire crowd there at the screening. What were your initial thoughts on A Quiet Place?
You know, I thought it was, you know, for him, it's an impressive, you know, job, especially coming from The Hollers, you know, which is a fairly independent film that, you know, I don't think a lot of people saw, but was recognized for because it was his feature debut as a director. And,
you know, Wilson, if you had gone to Sundance with us that year, you could have seen it too.
I did eventually see it. See, that's the thing. Even if I'm not at Sundance, eventually I see these movies when it comes out. But I don't lose any sleep. But, you know, when you do a movie like A Quiet Place, you know, we've seen, obviously in the last 10 years or so, we've seen plenty of variations of this apocalypse world, you know, from Walking Dead to Dawn of the Dead to the what's it called, Cillian Murphy film.
28 Days Later?
28 Days Later. You know, all of these where it's always just like a small amount of people, if not two or three. Even I Am Legend, you know, if you have to go that far back as far as, you know, being only ones left on Earth or so forth, and you have to, you know, stay alive and so forth. Here's a concept in terms of, like, okay, what has not been tried before? You know,
right.
Seeing a monster and escaping them is one thing. Okay, what else can we do? And I'm sure, I guess, when you're writing and directing it, you don't want to do something we've all seen before. And having this whole sound factor plays well because, you know, I guess the audience can build with it, you know, and that's part of the marketing of it, you know, how to sell it to an audience that's like, that's not going to say, I've been there, I've seen this, we know what's going to probably happen at the end. And it helps that it's a family, you know, you make it a family affair, you know, and the whole notion of silence. And I think we've all been in any situation, some point or another in our lives, where we had to be quiet. Whether it's not making a noise when you're a kid and you're trying to get something from the kitchen when your parents are asleep, whether you're sneaking back into your house after your curfew is over, you know, here, obviously, it's a whole monster tale. And I thought he did a pretty good job. I think, and, you know, and the fact that you don't see, you know, the monster for a good portion of the movie, that's the thing about these movies, is like, once you see it, then the fear is gone, and now you're just playing to see how it's going to play out. You know, the element of, like, what's out there is laid out there for a good portion of the movie. So you're intrigued, you know, you're jumping up, you know, they have those moments where you're going to jump, you know. And the acting, obviously, it doesn't go wrong when your lead actress is your wife and you put yourself in there. So, you know, you're the director, you're the writer, or at least co-writer, and you're the actor, you know. So you don't have to worry about so many heads in front of you telling you what to do, what not enough to do.
Right. No, and this is their first time actually acting together on the big screen, you know, Krasinski and Blunt, which I was kind of amazed by, but it's true. It's their first time. And you know, what I liked about the movie is that I don't think it relied too heavy on jump scares like a lot of movies do. It uses the silence to be scary. And that's one of the things I think I really liked about it, was that you had all these characters who were trying their best to not make a single sound at times when they're at the most anguish, you know, when they're in the most anguish. And, you know, there's a tremendous sequence involving Emily Blunt. You probably know the one I'm talking about, where she gets her foot gets hurt, and there's something else going on with her that under normal circumstances, a person would be screaming.
Yeah.
And she can't make a single noise because there's a creature stalking throughout the house. It's a tremendous, that is one of the most tense sequences. It's about a 10-15 minute long sequence too, right in the middle of the movie, and it is tremendous. At the screening I was at, you know, that we were at a screening, and normally in horror movies, people love to just talk at the screen, like always. And it's one of the reasons why I don't like horrors and I don't like going to horror movies, because people talk and I want to hear the movie. At this screening, nobody wanted to say anything. And nobody wanted to say a single word at the screening. And they didn't say anything after it was over either. I've never been through a screening like that before. And it was kind of crazy.
Yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, this is one of those movies where, like, silence is golden. This is where people want to pay attention to see what happens. And even, you know, the fact that he brought up Millicent Simmons, who was actually deaf, play well, you know, within his, you know, here's an actress who actually is deaf. And so far in the two roles that we've seen him in, you know, it's doing well for her. You know, I don't think we've seen anyone that we don't see an actress or an actor that often who's deaf outside of Marley Maitland, you know, who obviously won the Oscar for Children of a Lesser God, you know, be given roles that work well on screen.
Yeah, and I hope that they can continue to find roles for her. Even if she doesn't have to play a deaf actress, you know, a deaf child in the movies, I hope they can continue to find roles for her because I think she's really good, very expressive. She was really good in Wonderstruck just a few months ago. You know, and the other child, Noah Jupe, who was in Wonder, and he was also in Suburbicon with Matt Damon. He's been great in those two roles as well. I mean, he's 3 for 3, as far as I know, in terms of major high profile movies. This movie, I mean, it's essentially four people throughout the entire film, and they all work really great together.
You know, it's funny, like, they made a note that, you know, it's produced by Michael Bay, and obviously John Krasinski worked on that 13 Hours with Bay. You know, that was actually a good film that was underrated. But at the same time, I saw a Deadline report saying how, you know, it's blowing past Get Out as far as, you know, the numbers and so forth. And I was like, well, that's a good stat. I'm like, let's keep in mind, Krasinski and Emily Blunt are well-known actors. Whereas when Get Out came, no one knew who Daniel Kaluuya was. You know, unless you watch Girls, you don't know who Allison Williams was, you know. And Jordan Peele was untested because, for the most part, most people didn't know who he was outside of the Key and Peele tag team efforts.
Right. Yeah, no, that's true. Get Out, you know, ultimately it did well, so it doesn't really matter, but this movie comes with, I think, an equal measure of buzz as that movie did. But it's also not meant to be subversive the way Get Out was. And I think when people first started hearing about Get Out, I think there were a lot of people who avoided it because of the racial aspects of it. And I think people wanted to kind of take a wait and see approach to see how people reacted to it. whereas, you know, a Quiet Place, you know, its premise isn't meant to be subversive or anything like that. It's just meant to be a really well-made horror movie. I think that has the likelihood to have people come out quicker
to the screen,
you know?
Yeah, it's a simple story. You know, it's like, you know, it's about a family trying to escape a monster walking around that has supersonic ears and it can hear any sort of sound, you know. I did wonder how you know, if I was in that situation, how I can walk everywhere barefooted, you know, and not step on a glass or anything else like that, you know, so like how they were able to survive for so long, you know. It's done well. Hopefully, you know, it'll continue to do well. I think, you know, today's movies these days, you know, with so many movie streaming and so many little independent films coming out, it's like you have to market yourself. You have to make it an event that people would want to come out and see. Otherwise, you know, and you need to make big noise that opening weekend in order to get, you know, some sort of lasting presence for a few more weeks. Because now that we're entering the summer, you know, and obviously we have Avengers coming up, you're going to get blown away, you know.
Yeah.
You're going to get blown away. You saw what happened with Black Panther. All of those movies that came out within the 4 weeks that it was still tearing up the box charts are just dead and buried. You know, look at Pacific Rim, not doing so well. Wrinkle in Time didn't do so well. Annihilation got good reviews, but no one went to go see it.
Right, right. And I mean, horror movies have had the benefit of, especially the really low budget horror movies like this, some of the other ones, they had the benefit of really only needing one big box office weekend to be a hit. Whereas a movie like some of these movies that you mentioned, they need huge box office for multiple weeks, and they need international grosses in order to just break even. You know, a low budget horror like this, I can't remember what the price tag on this one was, but I believe it was somewhere less than $10 million. The budget was $17 million, excuse me, so I guess I was wrong. But that's still a low budget for most horror movies. And you know, and it's all it needs is one good weekend. If it hits $40-45 million like they're projecting this opening weekend, it's already more than doubled its profit, you know, and then it'll probably hang around for a few weeks until, you know, Avengers Infinity War knocks everything out the box. You know, and then by then it's already a hit.
Yeah, I don't see. I think what do we got coming out this week? Rampage, you know, so like
Rampage.
So, you know,
yeah.
So yeah, everybody, I think the Avengers effect has kind of forced everybody to like, okay, step up the marketing, do as much as we can because we have a tidal wave coming that can't be stopped.
Yeah, no, exactly. Everybody's waiting for that Avengers juggernaut. My prediction is still that Black Panther will do better overall than Avengers Infinity War does, but that's my opinion.
I think Panther will do overall better domestically. I think Avengers may do better overall because when you look at the last two Avengers, they've made over $1 billion that neither Black Panther could catch up to. And, you know, they've got much more bigger names and so forth. You know, Panther did well in China. Let's go for example, Panther did well in China. It made over $100 million, which is good. But then you have a movie like Ready Player One has made more than Panther already. It's made 140, last I checked, 145 within 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, Avengers Infinity War is going to do better than it internationally. That's for sure. But I think in terms of what it does overall, I think it's going to do better than Avengers Infinity War here domestically and by a good deal just because of the repeat viewings have been insane for Black Panther.
Oh yeah. I don't think,
And it reaches an audience that Avengers Infinity War doesn't like I keep saying, I had people in my family who've gone to see Black Panther two or three times. They don't know Captain America from Captain Kangaroo. They have no clue about anybody in any superhero thing anywhere, but they've gone to see Black Panther two or three times. They will not go see Avengers Infinity War once. And if they do, it'll only be that one time. So, I mean, and I think there are a lot of people, you know, like you and me, black people, who are going to be that way. You know, they might go see it once, but they might not go see Avengers Infinity War at all. Look,
I think I don't know any film that's gotten more repeat viewings. But then again, you know, you think of Star Wars, you think of Avatar, then at least when you think about black folks, then Black Panther.
I've
seen it four times.
You've seen Black Panther four times.
Like,
yeah, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I've seen it four times, you know, and you can see it. It is funny because I actually went to the theater yesterday to see Blockers, and there were people in its seventh week sneaking in to go see Black Panther after Blockers was over. You know? Like,
well, I mean, they're already looking to do Black Panther Infinity War double features in a few weeks because Black Panther is still going to be in theaters.
That's actually a good call. And this latest TV spot that we just saw recently that just aired yesterday, you know, you're
focused
showcasing
on
more
Panther.
Wakanda. Yeah, they focused more on Black Panther. So for those who have yet to see it, and want to catch up into the Avengers, like you said, you know, like even if you saw Black Panther once, you may go twice or again just to see it before Avengers, because you want to know where, you know, when the, you, there's no way you can see Avengers without knowing what happened to Black Panther. Otherwise,
right.
you'd be lost.
Right.
You know, because you wouldn't be invested.
There's
you wouldn't
nobody
know characters like Okoye.
Nobody going to see Avengers Infinity War who hasn't seen Black Panther.
Yeah. Otherwise, you won't know who Okoye is. You won't know who M'Baku is. And we have yet to see other characters, you know. But, like, when you go to Wakanda, like, if you have yet to see Black Panther, you're going to be lost when you go to Wakanda, you know,
yeah.
and not know what's going on. So, yeah. So, I think, yeah, you think about it, we're going to go back again just to see it. And it's to Marvel's benefit, like you said, if they do a double feature of Black Panther and Avengers, you know,
yep.
there's no way. Like, Panther's now already past Titanic is a number 3 all time and still
yep.
growing. I don't think they'll catch up to Avatar, which is number 2 at 760. That's just another $100 million. I don't think you can find another $100 million with the coming
no.
in the coming weeks. You know,
no.
maybe 10 to 15, but not 100.
Right, I agree.
Yeah.
All right, so we both dig A Quiet Place. We kind of veered off, started talking about Black Panther and other movies. But
yeah.
let's take a quick break, and when you and I come back, we're going to talk Blockers, another movie that's kind of controversial, I think. You know, just because of its I think because of its premise. So we'll take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Left her laptop open.
You guys are snooping on our kids?
No.
We don't understand what they're saying, so it's not snooping.
Oh, I love puzzles. Just saw Inferno.
Yeah, great. What do they say?
Okay, so there's something about an eggplant handshake.
Eggplant agreement.
Yeah, they got an agreement to make eggplant parmesan.
No, eggplants are dicks in teenage emoji language.
What?
You know what? That's true. Julie told me that the emojis have, they all have secret meanings.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, trees are weed, and snowflakes are cocaine, and that thing is Yas Queen.
Yas Queen!
What the hell is that?
You've never heard of Yas Queen?
No.
All right, Grandpa.
This is sex if I've ever seen it illustrated in emoji
form. No, maybe not. They're best friends. They're just saying, like, you're okay with me. You're okay to me.
All right, Wilson, did you know that eggplants mean dicks in emojis? Did you know that?
They made what?
I said, did you know that eggplants means dicks in emoji?
No, I did not. I guess so, you and I are probably old enough not to know that millennials signals.
I don't even know if that's necessarily true or not, or if it's just something they came up with for Blockers, but it sounds true.
They made it up. You can tell right now. Somebody's probably creating it.
It sounds true. I mean, but but Blockers stars John Cena, Leslie Mann, Ike Barinholtz as parents whose teenage girls make a sex pact to lose their virginity on prom night. So the parents find out in that scene that you were just listening to, and they decide to cock block their daughters, make sure they don't get none. This movie is funny because when people first heard about it, it was called, its initial title was just The Pact. They wanted to call it Cock Blockers, but obviously that was never going to fly. So they shortened it to just Blockers. But people were wary of it for obvious reasons. You know, you got a movie about teen girls losing their virginity, and a movie written by all guys, and people think, oh, this is going to be a nightmare. this is going to be exactly the kind of movie Hollywood does not need right now at this time period. Right now. but surprisingly, I think most people are digging it. I know. I actually liked it a lot. I thought it was really funny. And it was surprisingly, I would say, surprisingly sex positive when I didn't think it would be. The teen girls, they show you know, real strength and individuality and responsibility about what they're doing. And it's the parents who are the goofballs, you know? It's the parents who are the idiots running around making fools of themselves and looking like immature kids. But what did you think about Blockers, Wilson?
You know, I found it really funny, you know, like, you know, you mentioned about the male writers and so forth. And I don't think, you know, the average audience doesn't walk in there thinking this. You know, they're not walking in there thinking, like, who directed it, who wrote it, or so forth. You know, they're all thinking about, hold on one quick second.
Yeah, would you set off a fire alarm in your house, Wilson? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm actually cooking breakfast.
Are you trying to cook? Yeah. Are you cooking while you're doing this? Hey, come on.
Yeah, but anyway.
I don't come
you know,
on your
and,
show.
And I, think,
I don't come on your show frying bacon.
You know. So what's it called? You know, so, you know, I can say before, the average audience doesn't walk in there thinking, like, who wrote it, who directed it. They just want to see a funny film. And we've seen all these sorts of films, American Pie, you know, they're all zany, you know. And I think, like you said, you know, I think the adults, you know, you have between John Cena, and he's been doing a lot of these comedy things lately, and mm-hmm. Leslie, you know, Bibb.
I love Leslie Mann. You know,
yeah, Leslie Mann. You know, and she was funny, you know, and, you know, the kids, you don't know who these kids are. You know, they're just there, and the way they're placemats, like, this is what you do and so forth. I think it was hilarious. You know, the crowd was eating it up. You know, they want to see a funny film. You know, I think in the vein of, you know, what we get lately when you see a Girls Trip, and then you, if it's not an Amy Schumer movie, you know, they just want to see an ensemble, funny film, adult that has nothing to do with sci-fi or comic book movies, you know. And yeah. I think a lot of people can probably relate in terms of, like, especially parents, in terms of, like, oh, it's prom night, you know, which is a good premise, you know, as far as what to expect for your kids or from your kids during prom night. And they just took it to another level, you know. They always have to have those laugh-out-loud gag scenes that you know will play well or maybe disgust an audience.
Yeah, I mean, there were plenty of lowest common denominator scenes. John Cena has the one that everybody's talking about with the beer butt chugging. I got in trouble for saying that on WBAL Thursday, butt chugging. And I don't think I was allowed to. Yeah, but it's okay. But how can you know what else? I don't know how else I'm supposed to, what I'm supposed to call it, but that's what it was. But I was trying to warn people that scene is in there. But anyway, but that's probably the centerpiece scene, I think, for most people. But there are a lot of funny scenes like that. There's another one where they're driving and they have an accident that's really funny. You know, and there's a lot of good stuff in there. But the best stuff is reserved for the adults. I think the kids, as well, I think their conversation is pretty spot on. The kids aren't that funny. They don't get the really funny stuff. It's Cena and Leslie Mann and Barinholtz, you know, who get they have the best material saved for them. And I know you were talking about how people don't really care about the writers. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think it is to some degree, but not completely. But I do think in this case, the writers didn't, you know, were better at writing the parents, and when it came to the kids, they kind of wrote the kids as generic teens. You know,
well, that's okay. like unless you're marketing who the director is or who the writer is, you know, and some writers stand out, you know, and some directors stand out, you know. This is Kate Cannon's first film after writing Pitch Perfect, you know. So, like, but, you know, because we don't know her by face and so forth, we don't know who she is, you know, and they're not highlighting Pitch Perfect or anything like that. And you said the writers, I didn't know who wrote this, you know. But, you know, I'm assuming it's more than one or two people writing this stuff.
It's five people who wrote the script. It was five people.
You know, yes.
I know a couple of them worked on the Harold and Kumar movies and some other stuff. So, you know, really kind of lowbrowish comedies. And I think you get a sense of that in some of the scenes, you know? Which is not, it's not so, yeah, bad. That's not a bad thing. It's just, that's what it is.
You know, so yeah, so there are definitely a lot of scenes that play out, you know, and it worked well. It's like I said, you know, John Cena, you know, as big as he is, you wonder what kind of roles he can he get in Hollywood if it's not an action movie. And I think he made his final call. But then you realize
that's the thing. He's not even doing action movies. It's kind of crazy. You know, I mean,
because
I've been a John Cena
very
fan.
Typical. It's typical for him to do that. You know, it's very easy. Yeah. Remember, he started off doing those action movies like The Marine. You know, and you also got to remember,
really
The Rock started out this way as well in terms of doing a mix of action films as well as comedy, because I guess he wanted to stand out and let people know he has more than just a physique that can, you know, get him cast in those action films. And,
yeah,
you know, he started off doing
past,
like those kid films.
The path that John Cena and The Rock have taken is, at least to my eyes, very different. I mean, John Cena, his first movie was The Marine, and that's really the only action movie he's done other than that sniper movie he did last year that was really good with Aaron Taylor Johnson. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but he wasn't really in on the action very much. Mostly he's done comedies or dramas for almost his entire career. I mean, I interviewed him for Legendary. I think that was his second movie. The Rock started off doing a mix of action and comedy movies. And, you know, he's always had a greater versatility in his character than John Cena has. I think he's been afforded more opportunities, better opportunities than Cena, who's kind of having to prove himself that he can be a comedy actor, you know, and not just some guy who can only be a muscle head. The funny thing that about Cena is in this movie, in Blockers, he's a lunkhead. He's a sports fanatic of a father, but he's super sensitive. So he's totally not like you would expect him to be. You know, he's crying at every turn. He's dressed like a dork. Well, he's dressed like a dork in WWE too. He just doesn't know it. But he's dressed like an old fogey in this. In WWE, he's just dressed like somebody who was cool in 2005, but not cool now, you know? But
oh, yeah. And so I think that's a testament to, like, John Cena is certainly going out of his way to showcase, like you said, you know, some comedic chops, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously, with him with his crying thing, he's trying to show his emotional side, you know? Now, think about it. You got to think about, like, The Rock had to lose the weight to look differently, and who knows down the road what John Cena will do. He was also – wasn't he also in the Mel Gibson movie, Daddy
– In the Daddy's Home
Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah, he's in the Daddy's Home movies. He did,
so like,
train,
you know,
did Trainwreck. Trainwreck was the – Trainwreck, and he also did Sisters also. Remember, he was thug and Sisters. He was really funny in that. He's been really funny in small supporting roles in just about every movie he's done.
Well, that's what I think he's doing. I think he knows his audience that knows him from the wrestling world. And I think I guess part of his marketing is that he wants to showcase himself to a female audience, because he knows, if I do these movies, people can see me and know who I am outside of the wrestling ring, which basically a lot of young guys, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
and The Rock, The Rock had his Tooth Fairy and the Game Plan movies. Like, he had his movies where he was appealing to a wider audience, you know, to probably more female oriented audience, more family friendly audience. He did. He went through his stretch of movies where he did those. And that worked out for him.
You have to. You know, because either you're tall or you're too buff, you know, you have to find a way. Like, you have to convince producers, like, I can do something different. You know, because the shelf life on those are not much. You know, years ago, he could have done like 20 of those movies, like the next Jean-Claude Van Damme type of movies, you know, and that would be it. You know,
yeah.
But I think, you know, as we see,
he'd be going the Gina Carano route, which is only do action movies, and then pretty much you don't have anything else but that.
I thought
Gina Carano would come up, and she started off with Haywire, which is a tremendous movie, and she never really branched out into doing anything else, and now her career was just kind of sputtered out.
Basically, it's like you got that one shot, you know, and that's it. You know, it's like you're right. Gina Carano's like, whatever happened to her?
Yeah. She had a really, she had a really good sci-fi movie last year, but she's not. But it's one of those movies that nobody sees. So I mean, that's why I'm saying her career just kind of died out. Same thing for other wrestlers. There've been other wrestlers who have made the jump and looked like they had potential. I mean, I remember I thought Stone Cold Steve Austin was going to have potential to break out because he did The Condemned and people liked it and it did well. And then you know you didn't really see him anymore because he always started doing was lame action movies. You know, and it's like okay, well now his career sputtered out. But Johnson and Dwayne Johnson and John Cena are playing it exactly right. They're branching out. They're doing other things that take them out of their comfort zones, and they're succeeding at them. And people like them. They like seeing these guys show their full range. And I think Cena has a really good career ahead of him as an actor. At the way he's going. I mean, look, I'm a diehard wrestling fan. I don't expect to see John Cena wrestling very much. You know, after this, you know,
tonight's WrestleMania.
I don't expect to see him tomorrow. I don't expect to see him for a while. He'll be acting.
You know, well, unless he's getting a big payday, you don't give up your day job. You know, it's like you have to wonder, like, okay, he may not be appearing in every other box, you know, or TV match or so forth, but you will see him every now and then if he doesn't have a film down the road or it's not going to come out. You know, unless the pay is big enough.
That's basically what he's been doing for the last year. He's been a part timer. He shows up every now and then. Of course, he'll be at WrestleMania tonight in some capacity, maybe wrestling the Undertaker. We don't know. They're stretching that storyline out for God knows too long. That's what he does. He shows up every now and then. He makes a splash, and then he goes away again to shoot a movie. And that's probably the way he'll be. For a few years before he finally retires, you know, that's the way he's going to do it. And, you know, while that annoys the crap out of me as a wrestling fan, I totally understand it. So if you're going to go see Blockers, I mean, I think it's definitely a movie worth checking out, but, Cena is the best thing about it to me. He is great. In this movie, so.
Well, yeah, you know, he's to sell, you know, and good. And then,
no,
you know, him, Leslie Mann, and is it Baruchel? I keep forgetting how to pronounce it.
Ike Barinholtz.
Yes.
Yeah, Ike Barinholtz.
Those three of them
they're all funny. Yeah, they're all funny. All right, so I hear you cooking over there, but you got a few minutes to talk about a few news items real quick?
Yes.
Okay, so let me take one more. Let's get our final break in, and then you and I are going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about Terminator 6 getting delayed. We're going to talk about Dwayne Johnson's Fast and Furious comments, and maybe one or two other things real fast. So we'll be right back. Back. I'm here with my buddy Wilson Morales of blackfilm.com, my Comic-Con buddy,
Comic-Con, you know, hopefully we can make this happen.
I know. Look, we're going to get there one way or another. It's just a matter of where we're going to be. We'll figure it out. We'll definitely
get a spot. It always works out. We get a spot. It's never a dire situation where we're homeless.
No, right. We're not going to be homeless. We're not going to be those people sleeping out on the sidewalk waiting to get into Hall H. We're not going to be one of those people. We're going to be fine. We're going to get in. It's just a matter of where.
Yeah.
All right. So, and you know what, though? But, you know, while we're talking about that, because, you know, we got some new stuff, but I want to talk about Comic-Con a little bit because this is going to be an interesting year for Comic-Con. You know, I take Comic-Con on a year-to-year basis. especially lately with D23 and other options out there. But this is going to be an interesting year to go to Comic-Con because Marvel is entering phase 4. And we're going to start seeing stuff that you and I really don't know anything about. Like, we go through a lot of these things, and sometimes we have a pretty good idea of things that we're going to see when we go to Hall H and all these other places in the Comic-Con. This year, it's really up in the air. I really don't know what Marvel's going to show us to kind of introduce Phase 4 to the public. Have you thought about that a little bit?
I think we're probably going to get, like, Captain Marvel because they're shooting it now.
Yep.
I think, by that point, Avengers would have been out 2 months. So if it's dying at the box office by then, because by that time we'll have a lot more big office studio movies, they could show a scene or two from the upcoming Avengers movies.
Yeah.
You know? Or at least present what the new title will be.
That's what I think.
You know?
I think we're going to get
present
the Avengers
title.
I think we're going to get the title.
The title,
they've told us almost from, I mean, it's been obvious, but they've been saying, you know, the Avengers 4 title is a spoiler in itself. And I think so. To reveal that in Hall H at Comic-Con is going to be the big deal to get that title. And I think when they announce that title, they're going to give us a scene that they will probably hope doesn't get leaked. but it probably will. Honestly, the only scene from Marvel that was shown at Hall H that never got leaked, never, was that Black Panther casino scene. Remember when they showed that last year? And Ryan Coogler was like, "We will never release this scene. This will never be shown before the movie. So you're the only ones to see it." And I was like, "Yeah, okay." And then it never got leaked. I was like, "How'd they do that?
Yeah,
why can't they employ those practices for everything?"
Yeah, to the credit of its fans, no one leaked it online. Good casinos out there, and that was great because it was like we literally had to wait a long time. And it goes, "Hey, you know," and that's the beauty of it. You know, they if they follow that philosophy as far as how well it played out with Black Panther. You know, and look at now, like, we still don't know everything about the Avengers. You know, we're seeing snips now, and, like, you know, I don't know when you see it. I'll be amongst the first to see it. I see it on the 23rd, that Monday,
right,
which is 3 hours before the world premiere.
Yeah,
you know?
I think we see it very next day. I think we see it on the 24th.
So we've been invited to see it that early. At least I've been invited to see it that early. But yet we have to embargo to, like, later on that night
to put out. I know you people in New York and Los Angeles get your stuff just a tad bit earlier than us in D.C. Yes, I get it, Wilson. I understand.
You know, I'm off site. I've got my confirmation, you know. And then what else are we expected to see at Comic-Con? I think you're going to get Fox is not working on anything. From Sony, we'll probably get to see Venom.
But that's not true. Fox has two X-Men movies that are coming out in 2019. I mean,
they shot those already, right?
Well, no, they've both been delayed. Both New Mutants and X-Men Dark Phoenix got delayed. They were supposed to both come out this year, and they got pushed into 2019 because of reshoots. The whole thing with Fox is kind of up in the air for Comic-Con because we don't know what the status of the Disney deal is going to be by that point. And we don't know what the hell they're going to do with these movies. I mean, I assume these films will come out because so much has been invested in them already. They'll probably come out. But we don't know what's going to happen. I assume they'll show clips from both of those movies at Comic-Con, I think.
Okay. Now, have they been shot already or have they not been shot?
No. No, they were shot, but they've been delayed into next year because there need to be reshoots.
So
they're not done. They're not close to being done, either one of them.
Okay. So then you also have Sony with Venom, and
they have Venom.
They have the Spider-Man animated, and we may get some news regarding Cloak. What's it called? The Gina Prince Bywood directed film. What's it called?
Oh, that's a TV series, Cloak and Dagger. Isn't that?
No. The other Spider-Man, the female, is it Black Widow? No, not Black Widow.
Oh, you're talking about Silver and Black with Black Cat and Silver Sable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
that's in the Spider-Man universe.
Yeah, we may get a cast on that. You know, because I know they've announced one person in the movie. I forgot who it was. Yeah. So hopefully we're gonna get more information on that. I'm trying to think what else is coming up. These days, a lot of it's RPV. So, like, you know, whether or not we get anything from Marvel and Netflix TV series, you know, Luke Cage would have been out by then because it comes back. Second season starts on June 22nd.
I haven't even finished Jessica Jones yet. I'm like on episode 3 or 4. I'm way behind. I can't. I'm struggling. I'm struggling to get into it. Like it's been okay. I'm not feeling the Marvel Netflix shows the way I used to. I'm not excited for them anymore. Like the first few, I watched, like binge watched in within like 2 days. But now I'm like, all right, well, I watched them.
Daredevil seems to be more in line with the comic books, and maybe Luke Cage, we'll see, than any of the other series. Everything else kind of is layered out. In a way, maybe it works well in order to keep going on. And I don't know what the Netflix model may be for those things.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, you start wondering, like, every year there's always going to be something at Comic-Con that, like, okay, what's going to be the new hot thing? You know, are we getting a new Star Wars thing? No one's mentioned any of that stuff.
Right. Because we so rarely ever get Star Wars stuff at Comic-Con. Like, there almost never is there. You know, we saw it that one year that J.J. Abrams took everybody out to that concert for The Force Awakens. But for the most part, Star Wars has like a small presence in Hall H, like, you know, for Comic-Con. You know what I mean?
Because I think they, you know, I was at the D23. I went to last year's 40th anniversary over in Florida. Disney brought us a handful of journalists. And that itself was the equivalent to Comic-Con. So it's like, it's amazing how many people came out just for that alone. You know,
right.
3 days of just like, and, you know, just for people to see the trailer and have any of the old folks talk from, you know, obviously Leia, not there anymore, Billy Dee Williams, you know, as long as they're still alive, you know, you still have, you know, and it's going to be dwindled now that Harrison Ford's no longer part of the franchise. Billy Dee Williams is getting older, you know. Mark Hamill's still around, and we'll see how far you want to use.
I don't know if they want to bring Mark Hamill out there because all he does is talk shit about the Star Wars movies now. I wouldn't take him anywhere.
It keeps him in the fray. It keeps him in the fray, you know?
I would double kill Luke Skywalker at this point. I would, like, in episode 9, I would have them go and find his body and, like, set it on fire and then toss it into like a Sarlacc pit. I would have them do whatever they could to make sure Luke Skywalker never, ever, ever comes back just to piss Mark Hamill off. I'm so tired of hearing him talk trash about how his character was handled in The Last Jedi. Shut up. Jesus Christ, man. You ain't doing no other movies, man. So hush.
Now he's just living off his fame. You know, that's the thing. He's living off his fame. It's like, you know, he's the what's that? Rick Astley.
He's the Rick Astley of Star Wars universe.
He only has one film. That's a pop quiz. You know, name another film Mark Hamill did outside of Star Wars.
You can't name anything Batman related. You can't name any Batman animated movies. You gotta name like a live action movie with Mark Hamill in it. Good luck.
Yep.
I could name some, but nobody went to see Brigsby Bear with Mark Hamill in it like a year or two ago. You know, it's a good movie, but nobody went to see it because of Mark Hamill, and nobody knows it. But yeah, I mean, come on, just hush already, Mark. Calm down.
I'm just getting reports about the box office, and it seems like everybody did better than expectations. A Quiet Place did $50 million. Ready Player One has made $25 million. Blockers made $21 million when they thought it was only going to make $16 million.
I'll tell you what, I'm really happy to see that Chappaquiddick did $6 million in its opening weekend, because that's a really solid movie.
Yeah, it is. You know, it was supposed to come out last year. It was bought by Entertainment Studios, which is owned by Byron Allen.
Byron Allen's outfit.
You know, he had his choice between that one and Hostiles, and he figured he probably can get his better chances trying to get Christian Bale an Oscar nomination, all these buzz, than Chappaquiddick. And it didn't happen for Hostiles, but at least it's happening for Chappaquiddick, where it has its own audience. You know, last year it had just been lost in a fray of all these other movies. You know,
yeah, it came out at a decent time. It came out at the right time, only in 1,500 theaters, and to make $6 million is not bad at all for a political movie, a mature-themed political movie. Like, I got asked on News Channel 8 if I thought millennials want to go see this movie to get an idea of how politics used to be, and I was like, no. There's not a single millennial who's going to go see Chappaquiddick.
This is definitely Ted Kennedy
40 years ago. Sorry.
Yeah, this is for that over 35-year-old crowd. 35-year-old, 40-year-old crowd, you know, that knows Chappaquiddick, that knows Return, that knows Ted Kennedy, you know, and get an idea. We've always heard about it, but you never really knew about it unless you go into Wikipedia now, because because none of the Kennedys are on a major political position.
My thing about it that I've been highlighting about Chappaquiddick that I really liked about it, because look, I'm a fan of Ted Kennedy. I thought he was a champion of the people. I liked him. But my thing about Chappaquiddick that I really admired is that it wasn't hero worship of the Kennedys like almost every other Kennedy movie is, whether it's Jackie or Bobby or even a movie like JFK to some degree. Those movies are all hero worship of the Kennedys, and Chappaquiddick was not. Chappaquiddick did not make Ted Kennedy look good at all.
No, definitely not.
And I appreciated that. Yeah. I appreciated
that. You know
what
the movie I haven't seen, but I was thinking about going to see? I Can Only Imagine.
I never seen that movie. Yeah.
You know that doing gangbuster numbers. You know. That really has done well at the box office for a movie that, you know, these
space
movies
man.
They have this audience, you know, like I'm trying to see where it's now. It's made $69 million.
Yep, $69 million. $7 million budget.
And it could, whereas I don't even know what Wrinkle in Time is at this point right now. You know,
Wrinkle in Time is at $90 million. After 5 weeks.
$90 million. You know, could she make 100? You know, it's still at a loss. The movie's still at a loss. The movie cost $103 million to make. You know,
it's only made $100 million worldwide. I mean, so even foreign wise, it's not doing all that great.
Yeah, and that $100 million total. You know, you take in the money, the little money it's made overseas. You know,
right.
So incredible. If she makes 100, she can say, "Oh, I made a movie that it's still not a." It's still a win if she can manage to make $100 million. I doubt it, but if she can manage to make $100 million, that is, then she'll join that elite group of $100 million filmmakers, which is a feat itself. But still, the movie's at a loss.
Yeah. Before we get out of here, because we only got a few minutes left on the show, I'm going to run through a couple of quick items. Terminator 6, this is the film that's directed by Tim Miller of Deadpool fame and produced by James Cameron, who's got his franchise rights back. It got delayed all the way to November 22nd of 2019. No real reason for it. You heard anything about this, Wilson?
Could be Arnold, could be... I one time had a conversation with Jeffrey Katzenberg, and he once mentioned that, like, you know, when everybody's pointing out their releases, and Marvel has already done theirs with their releases of what's coming out for the next 5 to 7 years. And I guess every studio thinks about, like, okay, positioning-wise, how well can we do if we release it this week? What's around it? That everybody wants at least a 2 week. If you're gonna really, Terminator is it's a franchise, and they're always assuming, can we get 2 weeks in number one? 3 weeks would be gravy, you know. So whatever their release date was initially, they probably saw it and they said, okay, we're not gonna do well this weekend. Let's push it back to a time period which we know hopefully we can do better at. You know.
Yeah.
Now besides Arnold, who do we have a rest of the cast? I haven't read so much on it.
It's him, Mackenzie Davis, who I love, and Linda Hamilton. So far, that's it. Just those three.
Oh, so they're kind of disregarding the last Terminator film?
Right. They're disregarding all of them after Terminator 2 Judgment Day. They're disregarding everything.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, that's a total reboot.
Yeah, basically, you know, basically they're getting rid of Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, which I actually think is okay. Terminator Salvation and Terminator Genesis, they're ignoring. Before we get out of here, one last thing I'm going to ask you about is Dwayne Johnson's comments about Fast and the Furious. He brought up his feud with Vin Diesel again, the one where they and the Fate of the Furious where they did not share a single scene together. He's saying now that he may not be in any more Fast and Furious movies other than the spinoff that he's doing with Jason Statham. It sounds like his time with Fast and Furious is done. What do you think about that?
You know, he brought some shine to the Furious movies. You know, and we all know that not everybody gets along with a film. And here,
yeah.
You know, there's two cases where, you know, this is Vin Diesel's baby. And, you know, I forget, like, I don't know how the feud got started as far as who's got a bigger ego than the other.
They're two, they both got big egos. There's too much room for Dwayne Johnson,
you know,
and Vin Diesel in the same place.
Yeah, and Dwayne is, hey, you know, he's branching off on his own. He's now getting $20 million. He knows, look what he did with Jumanji. You know, Jumanji put him over on another level, you know.
Yep.
You know, they got the Furious movies, but what else is Vin Diesel doing these days? You know,
yeah.
Outside of that, he's doing the Chris Tucker thing, like, I'm chilling with this. You know, Chris Tucker did Rush Hour, and that was it. He was like, you know, their quote was at $20 million, I'm not trying to go down, you know. So when you see Dwayne Johnson almost nearly brought Jumanji to $1 billion, you know,
yeah.
That tells you something. And then we'll see this weekend what he does with Rampage. If Rampage can bring in a certain amount that Warner's did not expect, that just adds to his growing power.
Yeah, exactly. All right, my friend, this has been fantastic as always having you on here to talk movies with me, talk Blockers and A Quiet Place. You and I will keep up, of course, because we're homies, and two, because we need to find a place to stay in San Diego. So you and I will be keeping in touch.
We'll be talking
and,
right before Comic-Con.
Yeah, well, we'll talk before that, because I may bring you back on here to talk Infinity War in a few weeks. So
definitely.
So stay tuned. So, I'll be in touch with you about that. But everybody go check out blackfilm.com. My homie Wilson Morales' site. For anything black, if there's a black person in it, Wilson covers it.
Hey, that's what we do. Got to give him some shine.
It's what you do. I ain't hating either. I ain't hating at all. If it's got black people,
right.
Wilson's on it. But,
that's what we do.
Thanks a
lot,
for
having me on.
Thanks a lot, my man. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
All right, later. All right. And it is about time for me to wrap up the show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this episode of Cinema Royale. I'm Travis Hobson, of course. You can find me every day on PunchDrunkCritics.com, on Thursday mornings on WBAL Morning News in Baltimore, on Fridays on the News Channel 8 Middays, and also on TX Around Town. This has been great. Be sure you follow Cinema Royale on Blog Talk Radio as part of Critical Movie Network. Thanks again for tuning in. I will see you later. Bye.